Good morning. You're listening to KGNU Community Radio. This is Poco and Boco, people of color in Boulder County. I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekala.
And I'm Tracy Jones. And this morning we have with us
Satoru Tafula, an artist based out of Boulder County from Zimbabwe. Welcome.
Thank you.
Satoru, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
So I was born in the eastern highlands of Zimbabwe, where I was raised mostly by my grandparents, because my mother had moved to the city and sometimes she would travel with her artwork exhibiting. So,
real quick, what is your mother's name? And what kind of art does she do?
My mother's name is Agnes Nyanongo, and she is also a stone sculptor.
She's a very famous stone sculptor.
Yes, she is. I'm very proud to have a mother who has done so much work and has traveled extensively.
Also work in stone sculpture, and this is a family tradition, is something that has been passed, is being passed down to you?
Exactly. So my grandfather is a first generation stone sculptor in my family, and then it was passed on to several of his children, including my mother, and then now it's coming down to me. And hopefully I'll be able to pass it on to my children.
Very good. I mean, what was it? So when did you begin sculpting? Was this just something at a specific age you got started on growing up? Or did your family kind of guide you into it?
So I learned by observation. So learning by observation starts from when you are a baby. You are growing up in a family that has this tradition. So if you're born in the family, you're just born with it. So you start to see it when you're a baby, when you don't even know what it is, until you are able to tell what is happening. And you're learning by observation and also helping my grandfather, my mother, and my uncles. So it's a pretty, it has a lot of experience.
Good. Is, if you can, explain a little bit about the cultural tradition of sculpture in Zimbabwe, because we say like Shona culture, it's very known, renowned for its stone sculptures.
Yes, it is known all over the world, actually. But doing more research recently, because I grew up with a narrative that I was given, or I can say a narrative that I have heard from my elders when the tradition was being passed on to me. But recently I had more questions about the narrative that I kept on telling. So I decided to go on a more deeper research to connect, because some pieces were missing. Some pieces of history were missing. So I felt it important that I go and do this research. So there's a lot of misinterpretations and a lot of when Shona sculpture was introduced to the world, it was packaged and given a narrative that would sell. And so I was on a mission to understand and connect the dots, because our artwork in Africa was more, we lived the artwork. We, daily life was our artwork. We didn't display pieces to be seen, to be looked at, or to be enjoyed by passers-by. But we used artwork in our daily life. So that's what I wanted to connect. Like, how did we come from that way of life to now?
My question is what has been the most interesting fact that you discovered about Shona art in your research that has helped to form how you move forward?
The most interesting form was the most interesting turn on my research was that Shona sculpture, as it is said, because it's Shona sculpture because of where the origin, where it is, the people there, we are Shona people. So that's why it's named Shona sculpture or Shona art. But it had a lot of influence from outsiders. Christianity played a big role in it, and other art entrepreneurs and critics, they played a big part in starting the movement of Shona art, Shona sculpture.
So now, as an artist in Boulder County, how do you stay connected with being true to your art form?
Right now, my focus is on I go and dig and research on my research. I'm strengthened on my mission to understand and bring out more about my culture that is getting erased quickly, because young people are forgetting our culture. Maybe it's not forgetting, but they think that it's not relevant in today's life. So I'm focusing on some of the important things that were in my culture that are being erased today.
So was the main impact on the Shona culture and art colonialism, and how do you go about if that was taken in and is shaping what people think is Shona art in some way? Are you trying to cut through that and get back to the pure tradition that say through you generations or new family to try to get around the colonialist influence?
The colonial influence is still going to be there, because that is the world that we are living today. So if we take that and but also use it to try and reach back into our own rich culture. And because that's in the beginning, that's what happened. The when the colonial settlers came, they wiped out what was our own art and introduced a new art form. When they found out that there was no more artwork from these people, we cut out everything, all the artwork that belonged to them. We cut it out. There was no more artwork. So they had to introduce something new and give it to a people. So I was wondering, why does Shona sculpture, in its description and history, and how does it start around 1957? And we call it, it's our culture that's being passed on and on and on and on. But it starts in 1957. So going back and reading about the history, about the people who came and were the catalyst of, you know, starting this movement, they started it. But also, when they started it, they wanted it to feel like it's from the people.
Mm-hmm.
So they encouraged the first generation artists to draw their inspirations from their culture, but in a kind of new art form that was given to us.
So what are you working on these days?
I have two major projects that I'm working on. One is I got a commission. That's the biggest sculpture I've ever worked on.
How big is it?
Well, I went to Zimbabwe twice to quarry the raw stone. And when we pulled it out, it weighed 16 tons.
Wow.
And I did initial work in Zimbabwe with two assistants and shipped it to Colorado. And so now I'm finishing it where it's going.
Wow.
And so it's an ongoing project.
Is it going to be, is it commissioned by in Denver?
Yes, it's a commission by a collector of my work, and the work has been wonderful, and it's been, because they are very open to, they gave me the freedom to create.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a wonderful project.
And you also have a studio?
I have a studio, I have a home studio where I work with my children. I try to create an atmosphere where I, you know, that I felt when I was growing up as a kid.
So the artwork is very family oriented and close. I saw a picture of you and your son with tools.
Yes, it's very family oriented, and I want my kids to experience the way I did. I feel like I owe it to them. You know, if they choose to pursue it, or if they want to try it, if they want to help me, they can, as long as I provide the good environment like that.
Yeah, so that's passing on the tradition through observation, just like with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So
you're listening to KGNU 88.5, 1390 AM, Boulder, Denver, 98.7 FM in Fort Collins. You're listening to Poco and Boco. I am Tracy. People of Color in Boulder County is the show you are listening to.
And I'm Nikhil Mankeko. And today's guest is Satu Tafura, a sculptor based out of Boulder County. And Satu, talk a little bit about what brought you to Colorado and into Longmont specifically.
So I came to the U.S. in 2004, and I did exhibitions, several exhibitions, garden shows in across the country, and I settled in Colorado at Chapungu Sculpture Park in Loveland. And I was artist in residence there for a number of years. And then here I am today. I recently opened House of Stone in Longmont. And House of Stone is a sculpture space. That's where I work also there. There's a studio there. And House of Stone opened in August this year. So that's how I ended up in Colorado.
Nice. And do you have any opinions, or what have your experiences been in the artistic community and you know, Boulder County and just wider in Colorado as well?
Well, there's a lot of experiences that I go through. One of the challenges that I go through that I have is my life experience, my culture's history is related to colonization. So it would be natural for me to express that, to address it in my artwork. But colonialism is a very touchy subject. It's a very ugly part of history that a lot of people, often collectors or buyers of artwork, don't want to look at or talk about or acquire, you know, to have in their collections. So it's one of the subjects that really bothers me, or I see a problem in that, because it's doesn't allow you to express your full self in your language, because art is my language. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're saying it influences, you know, buyers, people who collect, don't want to see your truth expressed in your own artwork. They don't want to see this colonialism, and it impacts your ability to live as an artist and to sell your work.
Yeah, it does. It's a problem. I recently, for example, I created a sculpture. This is like a year ago, when there was these images and news about Africans crossing the desert, going into Europe, and some boats were drowning, and, you know, all these images, ugly images. But the story didn't, all these stories didn't, they were not depicting the humanity of these people. So, you know, to me, it made me feel diminished, you know, as an African. And also, you feel anger, you know, you're angry, you feel diminished. There's nothing you can do about this thing. But, you know, even now, just to say angry, you know, you start, if you live in this environment, communities like this, you start to police your words, because things like, you know, phrases like angry black man or things like that start to fly around. So you try to avoid those things. Don't want to say that. You don't want to do this, but
You still feel it,
you know? Mm-hmm. You know, it also, when it comes to things like appropriation, you see it there every day. You see appropriation, and it doesn't feel good. You know, when I came here, you see parts of your culture have been taken and schools have been opened, you know, just to, you know, using part of your culture. But it's a culture. It's people live that. They don't have the opportunity to say, "Oh, okay, I'm done. I'm going home tonight. This is done." But this is life. You taking part of that and making a school too, and you're benefiting. You're profiting off of it. So those are some of the challenges that you see as an artist of color.
And so oftentimes with when talking of cultural appropriation and more global based art, there's a classification between folk art versus fine, and it can relate to, you know, business and the kind of compensation you receive. Is that an issue for what?
Yes, it is an issue because we're talking about what do you call that? This is privilege that is working. Who is deciding what is art, what is fine art, what is folk art? The dominant culture who is deciding what is. I was highly trained for what I do, and yet sometimes some people want to
not compensate you for your skill.
Yes, not compensate. It's a result of, you know, that comes from deciding African art is folk art, you know, and then the other side is fine art. So in the end, you are not getting the same opportunities as the other artists who are doing fine art. You're not getting compensated as the same as those who are considered fine artists. So, it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it must also play into then exhibitions and even how it's viewed by the larger public. Because if something's, you know, almost classified as not being fine, or they're not acknowledging the lifetime of professional development and skill you have to build up and what goes into it, do you find the public reception is to look at things almost as, you know, through a lens that may be, you know, misguided views of Africa, global culture, seeing it almost as like, you know, people might see it as tribal artifact versus this is fine all just from a different culture than their own?
Yes, we've seen a lot of where people decide which one is fine art, which one fits where, and you know, the same as a result, you don't see yourself, you keep knocking on the door to be heard or to be seen, to be looked at, but still...
Are the opportunities fewer?
The opportunities fewer, and, you know, you don't see, sometimes you see, like, you know, it's not opening up, it's just...
It seems like it's just blocked.
It's blocked, yes.
Mm. Well, you have...
Oh, I apologize, Nikhil.
Well, you have...
If people want to see your art, how do they connect with you?
House of Stone is open in Longmont at 12625 North 107 in Longmont. They can also...
website? Is there a website?
They can also go on tafurasculpture.com.
Excellent. And before we close out, I know that... you're working on a documentary about to have people in Zimbabwe tell their own history. And when we talk of appropriation, there is also the dominant culture is always told the story. So that's another project you have going on, and I assume that will be up on your website as well when it's ready to go.
Yes, that will be up on the website. And like I said, it's an ongoing project. That's my second biggest project that I'm working on, so look out for
that.
Well,
we look forward to the completion of your multi-ton sculpture and this documentary. You're listening to KGNU Community Radio. This is Poco and Boko. I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekar.
And I'm Tracy Jones. And Satoru has been our guest today, and we want to thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.